It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 272 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, I have a great chat with Andrew Miller, one of the creators of a fascinating comic from Boom Studios called Death Be Damned. The first issue came out in early February, and the second issue will be out this week, March the 15th. We discuss how the series came to be and how he works with two other writers to make the series happen. We talk about the various characters in the comic and what we might see from them in the very near future. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Talking today with Andrew Miller, one of the creators of a really interesting Boom Studios book called Death Be Damned. How are you doing today, Andrew?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
It's good to talk with you. Number one of this miniseries has come out, and I understand there's four in there. Do you want to give us a little bit of background as to what the story is, what this book is about?
Yeah, it's a revenge story at its core, set in the 1800s. A woman, Miranda, is confronted, or her family is confronted, by seven guys she doesn't know, and they come to her home, they kill her husband and child and her, and ride off. We don't know why, she doesn't know why, but she comes to moments after they leave in a puddle, not dead. And we and she slowly discover that she can't die. And during that discovery, she comes to believe that she's meant to get revenge for the deaths of her husband and child. And until that happens, she's going to keep living. There are problems that ensue around episode two that we is still a surprise to people who've read the first issue. But things get more complicated than not being able to die even. And what we introduce in the first issue is this notion of an underneath, a place where souls, where life regenerates from death. And we learn a little bit about that process in issue one and much more about it in issue two, because she runs into, or this undertaker who is seeking, who has his own ideas in mind about life and death. He's got his own goals, which is he feels that his wife has been taken incorrectly, unjustly, and believes that she or her soul resides somewhere in this underneath, and he is going to turn to Miranda to help her find his wife.
Okay. Well, it's kind of interesting. It's unusual because, you know, I've got to say, Western stories don't usually deal with the supernatural all that much. I mean, there's been like The Sixth Gun and there's been some other stuff, but it's really rare. So how did you guys come up with this concept for this miniseries?
Well, I'm writing it with these two incredible Ben and Ben guys, Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, who have a lot more experience in comic books than writing than I do. They had initially written a pilot script, basically around this idea, and brought it to me with the idea of developing it for television. And my feeling was that it might one day make a good TV series, but at its core, it made a much better graphic novel because it was just a little bit too weird for regular TV. And the parts about it that I liked the most, that I thought we could explore and expand upon, just didn't lend itself to TV like it did with comics. So the idea of dealing with the supernatural, dealing with life and death, dealing with some of these stranger ideas and themes brought me back to like Swamp Thing and even Doctor Strange and some horror comics and metaphysical comics. And it just felt, so my suggestion was, let's just do this as a comic book and see where it goes. Maybe there's a life for it on TV after, but let's see if we can properly explore this idea in a novel, in a book. And then once we've done that, maybe there's a clearer road to TV, but let's not worry about that right now.
Well, I always think of a comic book as basically a proposal for how to make a TV show happen. You've got visuals, yeah. You've got script, you've got the whole thing is all in there. So basically you could take this and turn this into a TV show pretty, seems easily to me.
Yeah, it's true. It's a funny thing that I've done more television than I have comic books. So my experience is on the other side. And what I find is that often you just don't have the time in the way TV shows are developed and made. There's always a period where you're just rushing to make it happen. And I just finished working on a pilot. Well, I'm still working on it, but we finished shooting it last week. And what strikes me, what's so incredible is that the amount of last minute decisions you have to make in terms of design and look and feel and color that, you know, the cinematographer has not nearly enough time and the production designers don't have nearly enough time to sit back and really think it through the way you want. Mm-hmm. And this experience is the opposite, which is we get to do all that now and really play around and see what works and what doesn't and make adjustments issue to issue. So my feeling is that this is just a short run. It's just the four issues. But when the full book comes together, it'll have been a real evolving experience to read. And then you're armed with the information you need to make a proper show. Okay. Like we'll have, I feel like we'll be at such an advantage when you go into a place and say, okay, here's the idea of the show, because we've spent so much time thinking through every piece of it.
Right. Right. Now, you mentioned you're into TV. Are there things that you've been involved with that we should know about? Because it's probably good to know what shows you've been working on.
I'm doing this show now. I'm executive producing a show for the Sci-Fi Channel in the U.S. called The Machine, which is based on a really amazing independent movie called The Machine that was done by these two Welsh guys 2 or 3 years ago. And it's a really cool sci-fi movie and a really, really cool show. I'm doing that now. And then I'm currently developing a series for Tremors, the movie with Kevin Bacon, and working on another book called We're All Completely Fine. And a few years ago, I created a show for the CW called The Secret Circle, which was a group of witches kind of coming into their power. And I've developed a bunch of other stuff along the way. So that's where my experience comes from.
So sci-fi supernatural is kind of your bailiwick.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Wayne, where are you? Where are you now?
As far as where I'm physically located?
Yeah.
I'm physically located in Florida on the East Coast.
Got it. But I was an actor before. I did a movie called Cube, which was a sci-fi thing. Yeah.
I got some friends that are really big into that movie.
Well, I was an actor in that, and my friend Vincenzo Natali, who directed that, a great graphic artist and soon to be comic book creator in his own right. So yeah, I come from genre in sci-fi. So the genre part of this Western comes naturally.
Well, I always like to say, because like Jeff Johns and other people like him who were involved with film, like movies before, when they come to comics, they bring a very alive kind of feel to it. It's not the same old kind of storytelling. It's something really happens and there's a lot of action and things happening in it, which he does, which of course I really love the way that he does that. And I got a sense from reading your book, I got that same feel from you, because I'm never going to spoil the stuff in there, but there's a huge surprise at the end of your book. We will start at the end. I was just so shocked at some of the things that happened along the way. One of the things I love in a comic is when I'm surprised, because I've been reading comics for a long time. And I have to say, if something surprises me, I really love that. And I was so shocked. That wasn't the only place I was shocked, but I was shocked there particularly. And I was reminded, because Jeff Johns likes to end with a cliffhanger in his comics.
Yeah.
And I got that same sense from you when you ended this with a big old surprise at the end. And I thought, yeah, you know, there's something about TV or movie people who understand the fact that they want you to come back. And so they do something that makes you come back.
Well, thank you. I mean, that means a ton to me, because we've really tried to do that, like very specifically tried to do that. And again, Ben and Ben have feet in both worlds. They've done a lot of comic books and they've also written for TV. So I feel like they've been so helpful for me really understanding the genre from a writing point of view. But my memories of comics as a kid was that they were always too short. That's the way you – like I feel as though – when you're a kid especially, but that experience should never change, which is when you get to the last page, you should be furious that it doesn't end. And while I love collections and the full graphic novel as much as anybody, it's the same as streaming TV. While on one hand, it's so great to have it all there in front of you and you can be gluttonous and just dive in and spend a day or weekend or whatever it is, there's something that's lost in getting through an issue, lamenting that it's not finished, and desperately waiting for next week when you can see how the story continues. And that's really the experience we wanted to create, that we knew that there'd be four issues coming out, and I really wanted people to hunger for the next one. We all did. So I'm thrilled to hear that. And I can promise that it doesn't change. Like for each episode, for each issue coming up, it's the same. It's the same thing. And again, I feel like you, in my dream, the time that it takes to turn a page is too long. That even to get from one page to the next is like your eye should skip to the second panel, because it shouldn't be a casual, slow process reading a comic book to me. Like, you should really just want to feast on whatever's coming next. And we're doing our best to achieve that.
Yeah, well, I have to say, because it used to be back in the days that this comics, as well as television, as well as movies, everything was a complete story. If you bought an issue of Justice League of America, it ended in that book. And now, and television shows did the same thing. And now, of course, you know, we've got 24 legacies on. You've got 24 hours of one story. And you've got to keep people coming back week after week, or else you're in trouble. And I think the same thing is true with comics now. I think that transition has happened into comic books. Like, your book is there to make sure that people come back and want to find out what's really going on. Because you tease a lot in this book. And, of course, there's one thing I want to dive into, too, that I really like, is the fact that you guys live in the era instead of making it politically correct. Which,
right.
I always hate that when I go into, and all of a sudden we go back to the Wild West and women are all over the place, the sheriffs and all that stuff. And I'm going like, you know, that wouldn't have happened back in those days. You know, it's nice to think that it might have, and maybe there were circumstances where that did happen. But your lady runs into somebody who takes a shine to her, shall we say, and she's not very happy about it. And there were women who felt that way, of course, in that. And I love the way that you handled that, because what you did was you treated it like it happened in that era. And I thought that was real important.
Thank you. Yeah, obviously, I know exactly what you're talking about. And again, that's by design. We weren't looking to reinvent the West. We were just trying to put a spotlight on a story that you might not have seen before. So in this case, that a woman is dealing with this horrendous tragedy, and how she reacts to that kind of is a clean slate that you say, well, woman, man, kid, when someone is dealt such a traumatic blow, how do they respond? And that's what might be – I don't know that you've necessarily seen that story from a female perspective, but that's what we thought was – we'd definitely seen it from a male perspective, and it just seemed a little bit more interesting to look at it in this way.
Now, see, now you've hit something that's a real important thing to me, and that's to have strong female lead characters, that you don't necessarily have to have – political correctness to have that happen. And, you know, she's the focus of the story. There are other people around her, but we have to think about her and watching her react and seeing her feel for her. She's a strong woman, you know. In that era, in that place, they had to be strong people in order to survive. And so I don't have a problem with a strong female character in this era. I just don't like the political correct aspects of it when people do that.
Yeah, but, I agree.
But to me, you did a beautiful job of making her in that era and yet a strong woman character that, say, a female reader would pick this comic up. They would like this person. They'd like to read more about her, I think.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope a couple of us on the team have wives, and my wife is not an avid comic book reader by any means, but my hope was always that when she picks this up, it'll keep her interest in a way that some of the comic book movies I drag her to don't. And again, it's just storytelling. It's the same thing as TV to me. Like, you can try to make TV for men or try to make TV for women, but as many women watch The Walking Dead as men do, it's just good, compelling stories. And in this case, it felt like what we're trying to do is create a real emotional core to a character and throw her out into the wild and see what happens. And I think if people can connect to that, because it's a visceral experience that you say, well, were I in her shoes, would I have the guts to do this? What would happen? How would I explain it? What do I want? And we're trying to tell that story. It's not a fanboy story and it's not a female story. It's just a, it's a human story that I hope people can relate to.
There's one part about her that I really liked in the beginning. You kind of establish her character a lot. Is when she's awake and she's walking and she walks into the stable where the horses are supposed to be. One of them is dead and the other one's not. And she talks to it. And the way that she talks to it's really kind of interesting. I don't want to spoil anything, but she says something to the effect of, you know, we don't get along necessarily, but now we're going to have to.
Yeah.
And I like that. And guess what? They do. You know, she talks to them in such a way to that horse and they end up working together, which I really liked. See, that's a sign of her. She's a strong person. Gender aside, she's a strong character that knows what she has to do in order to make things happen. And I like that. I like that in a strong female character. I really do. I was real impressed when I read that in the book because I have so many friends of mine, usually women, who don't want to see a woman be a strong character. They want her to be very maternal, you know, and she's a mother, interestingly enough. But she's got her maternal side, but she also has the ability to come up and make things happen that needs to happen. And I just so loved that when I was reading her character because I wanted to tell my female friends, read this book. Read this book.
Well, please do. And I'm thrilled that you felt that way. In some of the issues coming up, we'll see a slightly different side of her. We'll come to understand. As you were saying, we tease a lot in this issue. We'll get more answers in future issues, and we'll get a glimpse into her life before this happened. And again, like you're saying, you can't be soft in that time. You have to be strong, male or female, and kids and adults. And we'll see why she has this capability. You know, ultimately, you want to know what she's avenging. You want to know what she's fighting for or the memory of what she's fighting for. And that's, I hope, the very touching, relatable story that she is all the things you've just described, but she is a loving or was a loving wife and a loving mother, and she's just really pissed off now.
So you've got a very important question that I've got to get answered as I read this book. And I don't expect you to answer. And you've mentioned the fact that she comes back. She wakes back up. Why did she wake up and the other two members of her family did not? This is something that I right now I want to know the answer to that real desperate like. And so that's why one of the things that's got me wanting to keep reading the book is to find out what happens. I love to know why things happen. And so when I got to that place, when I discovered what was going on with that, right away I had to find out why is this happening this way. So that's one of the things that just, I think if you're a reader who likes the characters and gets into it, when you come across that, you're probably going to be going, wait a second, why did it happen this way? And it sounds like you're going to explain all that as things go along.
Yeah, we will. I mean, again, you're hitting on what I think is a really fun aspect to the books, which are, there's why her, where is she going, why is this happening, does it happen to other people? I feel like we raise a lot of questions that all get answered. It's the beauty of this short run is liberating, strangely, because, and this goes back to something you mentioned to me originally, but the three of us, Ben Acker, Blacker, and I, were able to sit down and say, okay, Boom was very generous in this way, but they were like, we like this story that you guys want to tell. How do you want to do it? How many issues? How many pages? What's the format? How do you best tell the story? With all the answers in front of us, we were able to divvy it up into, okay, let's do four issues and put it together as a book. And this is what we think we can accomplish in each one. So the things we conceal or tease in the first issue are things that we know will be answered in later issues because it's not a long run. So we have that ability.
See, that's the most fun. When you know that a writer is going someplace, nothing against the X-Men, but for decades, you could read the X-Men and never get to a conclusion. You know, everything just went on and on and on and on and on. And I got to the place where I finally said, you know what? I can't take this anymore. I got to get some kind of conclusion someplace. You can write it in such a way that people know that you know where you're going. And that's really important. And I got that sense from your guys' writing is that, especially with the surprises along the way, that you know what we're thinking. And you're going to give us changes to that or surprises in line of what we're thinking. And I always think that's some of the best writing out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's so incredible, those long-running titles. It's a whole other set of skills because, like, different guys come in, and to tell a story within the larger framework seems so hard to me. Like, when you say X-Men or Spider-Man, Spider-Man, the idea of reinventing or not, you take on Spider-Man and you want to make it slightly different, but it feels like a whole art unto itself. And the people who are successful in taking a title like that and putting life into it without deviating too far, I mean, it's amazing to me. But I'm with you that at various times you go, okay, you're just spinning your wheels now because the same things are happening over and over again and just doesn't feel like we're headed anywhere. So mm-hmm. I hear you.
Now, I want to talk about the process, but before I get to that, I want to talk about a couple more of the characters. I want to talk about The Undertaker, because as strong as the main character is, he's not quite that way. He's a little more gentle in the way he does things, and yet he's doing some rather grotesque things in order to try to get his wife back. And so he's strong on some different levels than she is. Do you want to talk about him? Because he's like an American Indian kind of person, isn't he?
Yeah, he's part American Indian, and he's looking to the traditions of the Zuni tribe, or I think it's the traditions of the Zuni tribe that started him on this path to understand what happens when life ends. And it's this idea that energy is in constant flow. So life and death isn't as finite as we think of it, that energy just goes from one place to another. So the energy of a person, what he comes to believe at least, which is inspired by Zuni tribe, and then he takes on other spiritual ideas, is that it's just a cyclical energy cycle. What life turns into new life, and it's not so much of an end that we think of. So what he thinks is that his wife is in process, that she was killed in a mining accident. He believes that she wasn't meant to die, and that therefore he has a chance to bring her back because it's just energy, and why not bring it back? And this idea for us, this goes back to putting genre in the West, in the old West. There's an idea that the guys had initially that I'm extremely attracted to, which is I feel like there's a time in our history where we could have gone in a more spiritual route or magical route, for lack of a better word, and instead we chose science, mm-hmm. and that we built engines and railway and literally crushed the ground to create this rail system, and the rail system for mail and mail for communication. And so we embrace technology, and it just kind of steamrolled over what might have been. Mm-hmm. And this time, the 1800s, is this time where I think you're at this crossroads of like, well, we could go this way and we could go this way. And we chose technology, but I often wonder if the magic side of that equation was stronger, what might have happened? And you can turn to Native Americans and various cultures who were far more steeped in spirituality and magic that ultimately it went out of fashion. But this is the last gasp of that time. So the way we see this, the earth is reacting to what man's doing, and that we're taking resources and we're manipulating the earth for the sake of technology, and the earth is reacting in a vengeful way. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the earth, she, he, it understands our lead character and their need for revenge. And that's partly why she gets involved in the cycle.
Yeah, it's so funny that when you were talking to me about the Undertaker's beliefs, he could have been a scientist if he would have been born today, because, you know, the idea that energy moves from one form to another, that's a scientific concept that scientists keep delving into in today's era.
Yeah. What we like about him is Miranda has a singular focus and knows exactly what she has to do, which is kill these seven guys who murdered her family. Mm-hmm. He knows what he wants, but his path to getting it is less clear. Mm-hmm. So he has these ideas about what life and death is, but he can't possibly know if he's right until Miranda comes along and she gives him an opportunity to test out his theories in a way that he hasn't had before. So he's less sure-footed than she is, and therefore not quite as strong a character. His will is strong, but she has a very clean path to vengeance, which is a gun, a bullet, and a well-placed shot. And his path is a little trickier because he's playing with something that he doesn't understand. I should say, without spoiling things, he's playing with something that he probably shouldn't be playing with, is the problem. That for a guy who believes in this kind of balance, he's going out of his way to tip a balance in a way that he probably shouldn't, and we'll explore that toward the end of the book.
Sounds like a sequel could be coming out of that kind of stuff, too, with all that, too.
I hope.
You're mentioning all this stuff about The Undertaker and other things about that. There was a whole other comic in there I was thinking you guys could do if you wanted to do as you were discussing all this good stuff. So you guys are just scratching the surface of this whole world and all kinds of things that you guys can tell. So I like that real well. Talk a little bit to me, though, about the epilogue, because, you know, we had this big surprise at the end, and then we get to an epilogue, and you were mentioning about we don't know whether this is unique to her. Well, we kind of find out that in the epilogue, some of that, although it's not exactly the way I expected. So, again, you guys like to surprise me, which I love when I read a book. If I'm surprised, I'm happy. If I can tell you what's going to happen 5 pages from now, I say, heck, I don't need to read those. But you surprised me again at the end with this little epilogue. And are we going to see there's a gentleman who's basically collecting dead bodies? Are we going to see this guy as the story unfolds, as things move forward?
Yes. Yes, we are. I'm trying to say this in a way that doesn't spoil anything.
Right.
But what we find is that nature, in nature's battle against man, or nature's battle to maintain the balance that had existed for thousands of years before this starts, nature has many tools at her disposal. Mm-hmm. And the epilogue hints at another tool she has that will come into play in the next issue and beyond.
Very, very cool. I'm looking forward to that now. See, all these things, like, again, you did a lot of teasing in this issue. You're kind of making us want to know more for the next issue. And so that one, like that epilogue kind of surprised me because it doesn't quite go the way I expected. So now I need to know more about that. So
good. I'm glad.
That's a great
show. I'm very glad.
Now, why don't we talk a little bit about process? Because it sounds like the Ben Squareds came up with the idea of how to do what the story basically was going to be. But you brought the... How did this work? How did you work with them in bringing this to a comic form?
Well, they had this fantastic pilot script to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then this is a bit of a spoiler, but I hope when people hear this, they'll just run out and pick up the first two issues and it'll make sense of it. But one of the things I longed for in the pilot was this idea of consequence, because we were starting to explore balance in nature and science and magic and technology, but it felt like there's lacking consequence, that revenge in and of itself wasn't really the end of anything, but really just a new part of the cycle, that nothing is so complete to be perfect. So even getting vengeance has a price. And so I introduced this idea that every time she dies, she loses a bit of herself, which becomes a problem, because when you're on a road to vengeance and you start losing memories, you start to forget why it is that you're on this path. And that becomes a problem for her in a number of different ways.
Wow.
So then we took that idea, and that's where it felt a little bit beyond the scope of television, at least in its conceptual form and thematic. So we went to Boom and said, we have this really cool idea, the three of us. And they knew Acker and Blacker, and they knew me from TV. And they said, this sounds like a good marriage. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of process, because I've never written a comic book by myself, so I only know this way. Mm-hmm. And it was similar to how we make TV, which is the three of us sat in my office for a while and hashed out ideas and threw stuff around and then started putting these ideas on a whiteboard and dividing things into at first three issues, then four, then five, then back to four. And then once we'd mapped out the story, I wrote an outline based on what we'd figured out, and then we sent it around to each other to fix it up. And then it's been like that. The collaboration has been incredibly strong ever since. So there's an outline, and then one of us will do a specific outline for the issue, and then the next person will take that and adjust it and then start writing the script. And then we just keep passing it around and passing it around. It's not a conventional way to do this, but it felt like that the ideas were big enough that it required all three of our brains on it at all times, because I don't think any of us are that smart by ourselves. So there's no Alan Moore in the group. So we just had to say, I'd try something. And then one of the Bens would be like, hey, that's great, let's take it in this direction. And the other one would say, what about over here? And then it'd come back around, and then we'd lock it in and send it to Boom. And then these guys that we have, these editors at Boom, have been fantastic and have embraced the concept of this and the weirdness of it, and I think have been a real strong part of our collaborative process, because they've really made some fantastic suggestions and know the Boom audience and comic books. So they've been a huge part of it too.
Which is really cool, because the reason I asked the question is because I couldn't tell who did what in there. And I was kind of wondering, I said, well, did they do characters? Did you do plot? How did this work? But it's so well put together that I can't tell that. And I think that's a credit to you guys to put the story so well together with the three of you that we don't quite know who did what in there. And that's a good thing. I like that.
Good, good. I'm glad. Again, it's the way you tend to write TV, mm-hmm. that even when someone writes, you know, when you watch an episode of TV and you see someone's name on it, it's very rare that the writing process doesn't move through many people's computers. And while the person who gets credit for it is perhaps most responsible for that episode, it's such a collaborative effort. Conceiving the story, breaking the story, and then outlining the story, and then writing the story. It's just the model that I'm so comfortable with because of TV that we just used here. And again, I think because it's a short run, it's helpful because there's an end in sight and we all know where we're headed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm really, really pleased with how well it worked.
Mm-hmm. It's a great book. Now, before I let you go, I do want to talk about the artwork, because I really like the artwork as well. It's got kind of a craggy feel to it, the only way I can ever really describe it. There's very little in the way of shadow, and really black, but there's lots of browns and reds and yellows and sort of lime greens and other kind of colors like that, as opposed to dark black shadows. And so what's happening is we get the sense of there's this kind of otherworldliness happening with this. And then I love the credits page. It has two guns going up and swirls of smoke going around the barrels of the guns, which I really loved. I just thought that was great. I don't know how much you had to do with the artwork or, you know, any input on it, or because Hannah Christensen is the name of the person who illustrated it and done the cover, all this kind of stuff. I think it's really great. It fits the tone of the story so nicely. It's one of those books that when you start to read, you dive into, and when you, like you said, when you get to the end, you go, oh, it's not the end already, kind of stuff. So it's a very well, I think the illustration fits your script very well. I really like it.
Oh, thank you. We feel so too. We feel that way. Hannah, she's so talented, and it's exactly as you described. She brings a scraggly quality to this that I think just immediately puts you in the right headspace for what the story is, that it's a little bit more stark than people might be used to, and the features are sharp and the lines are sharp, and I feel like in some ways it's not as emotional as some art is, but at the same time I think in our story it evokes much more emotion because it forces the reader to lean into it and try to read the faces that she's drawing. You don't look at Hannah's art sort of at a distance as an observer. You have to kind of get involved. And her work brings people into the pages of the book where we then do our thing. And I'm thrilled with it. I knew her stuff from Harrow County and something else that she'd done that Boom had given us. And it just felt like she was a perfect fit for this because it was just a little bit off. Like we're doing a Western that's a little bit off, where we have a character who's seeking revenge who's really off. And it felt like she elevated the material in a way we were just thrilled with.
Well, it works all together so superbly. When something works together, one thing doesn't stand out from the other, then you know that it's a marriage that works perfectly, you know, and I think that's what this book does. You guys' plot and her artwork really comes together in a real sharp way, and it propels us. It makes us want to turn the page real fast and find out what's going on. And I know you've got surprises for us. If this is only the first issue, I can't wait to see what you've got in the other issues that'll be coming.
Good, good. I think you'll be surprised and pleasantly so.
Well, issue two now is going to be coming. Issue one came out in early February. Issue two is about to come out. Do you know what date issue two is going to be coming out?
I want to say March 12th to 12th or 13th.
Well, it's probably the 15th. The 15th is a Wednesday in March.
Oh, right. Oh, is it that late? No. It's too late for me. Then, yeah, that makes sense.
Well, because I looked on the schedule, and it wasn't coming out this week that I could see. So I have to assume it's going to be the 15th. Keep an eye out for it, because it's a really interesting book. It's something like you've never read before. And for somebody like me who has read comics a long time, I crave experiences like this. So I just think you guys have done a wonderful job, Andrew. And I just think it's a terrific thing. Now, if people want to follow you as far as like keep track of the projects you're working on, maybe TV, comics, do you have like social media way that we can keep track of you or follow you?
Yeah, I do. On Twitter, I'm Miller Lowlife, MillerLowlife. Okay. Miller Lowlife, mm-hmm. And also on Instagram. So the best way are one of those two places, Miller Lowlife. Yeah, please come follow me and hear about this and all the other stuff I'm doing.
Well, I can't wait to read the rest of these issues because if this is the first one's any indication, we're going to have a really good reading experience in front of us. Lots of surprises, which I adore, and a totally different setting that I'm used to, and interesting stories and great characters. So now you guys are doing a great book. It's called Death Be Damned. Issue number one is out. If it's not in your store, you can go to Comixology and find it there because Boom Studios is on Comixology. And I want to also thank Mel Kaido for helping me get this interview set up. And Andrew, keep up the wonderful stuff, and please let your cohorts know that they're doing a great job.
I will. Wayne, thank you so much. It's thrilling to hear how you've taken this book because it's exactly the way we'd hope someone reads it, and it's very satisfying. So thank you so much for all of this.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Please be back next time when I'll be speaking with another great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.